Good morning. It's Tuesday, July 29th, 2014. This is Tech Talk Today, episode 34. My name is Chris, and I'm joined in studio by a very special guest. Hey, Ange.
I am special.
Yes, you are special.
It's me.
Were you taking a selfie while I was doing the intro? Okay. That's pretty that is pretty special. Well, don't fear, Ange, because I know these first couple of stories are not your cup of tea. That's why we are also joined by an incredible group in our Mumble Room assembled here to talk about the tech headlines with us today. Hey, Mumble Room. Good morning.
Hello.
Hey, let's start with this first story that just broke right as we were going on air last week, so I didn't have a chance to go over it. The Chinese government is investigating Microsoft, and this is a serious one. They've shown up at four Microsoft offices at the same time in a coordinated arrival.
That's awesome, actually.
Kind of impressive. This is according to two people familiar with the inquiry, say the Chinese corporate regulatory officials made surprise visits to Microsoft's office, and also Reuters and the South China Morning Post are picking this up. They say the company is being investigated by the State Administration for Industry and Commerce, which raided Microsoft offices in Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, and Chengdu on Monday. The China State Administration for Industry and Commerce acts as the nation's corporate registry and has some marketing and antitrust responsibilities. AIC officials sometimes pay visits before they launch into a major investigation, kind of like a little warning shot. We're looking into you. So it's sort of like an intimidation technique. And, of course, Microsoft has been in the Chinese crosshairs since really the Snowden leaks came out. One of China's main state-run television broadcast networks ran a report in June that questioned the security of the new Windows 8 operating system and said that maybe they were complying with the NSA in cyber spying. And then, of course, in May, Chinese authorities banned the government institutions from using Windows 8.
Wow.
Other companies from the U.S. are under scrutiny as well. The same Chinese state broadcaster also raised questions about the security of the iPhone in July with allegations against Apple.
Huh.
So maybe they're going to, excuse me, we need to do a little investigation here. A little bit of backlash, Mumble Room. Do you think this is to be expected after the Snowden leaks?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was coming.
Yeah, it was
coming. It was coming. China is really throwing down the anti-spying hammer big time, and honestly I don't blame them.
Ironic coming from a country that has a great firewall.
Yeah.
And also generally doesn't care too much about copyright.
Right. Well, they care about getting spied on, I guess. And who knows if Microsoft claims they've released a statement saying we've never complied with the NSA to enable spying. Microsoft, that's not exactly true, is it? But I look at this and I think this is really the kind of pressure we need. We need companies like Microsoft and Cisco and IBM and Apple to just get screwed over so badly. They need to just take it up the bum so badly that they finally push back using their lobbyists, using their money to reform the NSA because they want to make money in other countries. And while that happens, of course, folks like Mike Rogers will say they're unpatriotic. How dare they put their profits before the security of the United States? But people like Microsoft, Satya Nadella and Tim Cook will be there with their pocketbook saying, we need to sell into these other countries. We have to be able to do this, and you are delegitimizing our business. That kind of pressure is exact kind of pressure we need to actually see some genuine reform, because at the end of the day, it's these companies that are running the government. The more you know.
Yep. I mean, if you think about it, if these countries are worried about NSA-tapped, you know, operating systems, and companies like Microsoft and Apple can't, you know, sell their products there, they're losing out on possibly billions of dollars of revenue.
And they also have Red Flag Linux. I mean, that's another thing that's interesting about this is while they're also kind of pivoting away from Microsoft, they have a solid alternative they can recommend to people. Wonder where that
will go. Also, their official operating system, as far as they're concerned, is Ubuntu Kylin.
Right? Oh, yeah, that's right. They've got, Kylin now, the Ubuntu spin for China. Hey, let's shift gears. I got something from the obvious file. Mozilla named their new CEO, and when you hear his last name, it seems like such a given. Beard. Mm-hmm. Mozilla's new CEO, Chris Beard, has been appointed the final CEO of Mozilla. He was actually the intern.
He doesn't have one.
I know. What a tragedy, right? I mean, I wasn't going to say anything, but seriously, what a wasted opportunity. He's been with Mozilla since 2004, just before Firefox 1.0 was shipped, and he's been deeply involved in every aspect of Mozilla ever since. During his many years at Mozilla, and various times, he's had different responsibilities for almost every part of the business, including product, marketing, innovation, communications, community, and user engagement. Sounds like a slam dunk. Got a great last name. He's been with the project since Firefox before 1.0 shipped. And he'll be now running the ship. Ange, I had a question for you.
Oh, great.
Did you even consider that the Mozilla and Firefox, because you're a Firefox user, did you ever even consider that there was a CEO running like essentially a company for that browser? Did that even cross your mind?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just wondered because to me, as I don't think as an end user, that would have ever registered with me. It's just a web browser.
It just is like Google.
Somebody's got to make it, right?
Chromium.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I was just curious.
Well, I hope they vetted his political views because, God forbid, he has something that you know everyone else doesn't agree with. I mean, come on now.
Well, I think that's probably the other thing is I think he's kind of a safe choice. He's been the interim CEO since that whole debacle, and there really hasn't been any upset over it. They were doing a search, but they just felt like they didn't find anybody better.
So they settled.
Well, kind of. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's settling or if it's like, well, we just want to be able to say we really made sure we made the right choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the end of the day, I don't know if it really matters to end users. That's kind of what my point was. Something that was submitted to the Tech Talk Today subreddit that's a little concerning, and I don't know a lot about it, but there's a leaked discussion paper that reveals a new Australian online piracy crackdown that's going in full swing. And this is the reason why this is extra unfortunate is because the Australians are often forced to resort to pirating because so much content is not available to them.
Yeah, right.
Game of Thrones, for example, is a huge thing that gets stolen over there, and what are they going to do? It's not being provided to them in a realistic way, except for like with one company. The federal government is proposing that internet service providers such as Telstra and others make measures to discourage or reduce online copyright infringement, according to a leaked copy of this discussion paper. According to the document, which I have a link to the PDF in the show notes, first obtained by a new site, Crikey, the government also wants to give itself the power to prescribe specific measures that would see internet providers discourage online copyright infringement altogether. In the cases where the industry does not develop effective schemes or commercial arrangements, there could even be fines.
So, like, when you receive a letter in the mail saying that that something illegal has been downloaded over your internet?
Yeah, but beyond that, it's like now there's, like, the government wants the ability to go after the ISP for not stopping you. So, and of course,
from the ISP.
Yeah.
That's one measure they could take. Like, notify the user, hey, we saw that you downloaded this.
Yeah, they say financial damages could be levied against carriage service providers who breach four categories, including providing connections to copyright material, referring users to an online location where it exists. The document is signed by the Attorney General George Brandis and Communications Minister, get ready for this, cited the reason for these changes as new unratified obligations within the U.S. known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. This is an agreement that the U.S. is pushing with a lot of trade partners, and in there it stipulates actions that country must take against copyright infringement. And so Australia is essentially interpreting those things and then created this discussion paper saying these are the laws that we need to create. It overrules a decision in the High Court by 2012, which found that internet service providers could not be found liable for authorizing an act by a subscriber that infringes on copyright. So they already had something in place to protect from this, and it rolls that back.
Interesting.
The discussion paper
looks like a huge opportunity for Netflix or Hulu or somebody to get in there and say, hey, give us money and you aren't pirating anymore.
Yeah, well, see, I think there's content licensing problems there that are preventing. I think they would love to get in there and make more money. So I think that's part of the problem.
Well, yeah.
Hey, while we're talking about Australia, unless any other you guys, if you have anything on that, go ahead.
No, it was just that the licensing problem, we have the same with Netflix in Norway. We don't have all the content you have in the US.
Right.
In a lot of countries, ISPs are actually classed as common carriers, which actually prevents this from occurring. So I don't know why Australia doesn't do the same thing.
That's something I'll look more into. While we're talking about Australia, I thought this was pretty fun. This was also submitted via the subreddit. Aussie hackers get Doom working on an ATM.
What?
Yeah, check this out. This is so great. I'll play a little video of it too.
Out of space.
Look at this. That's Doom on an ATM
right there.
Two
buttons that can do stuff.
Now, unfortunately, they do have to use like some of the side buttons on the ATM for like weapon switching and stuff.
That's kind of funny.
But they're able to use the input keypad for some of the navigation.
Still don't have any FTs.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
We need another keyboard, but at least the side buttons work.
Isn't that great?
Doom on an ATM.
Does it spit out money?
So here's a little bit of info about this. If you're watching the video version, you guys can see this. So hackers in Australia has succeeded by running a classic first-person shooter on a bank cash machine. The ATM runs, you were probably guessing it, Windows XP embedded.
Yep.
Now, remember, embedded actually still is like patched for a couple more years. This particular version of XP still gets some support. It can be controlled using the device's buttons, with the game appearing on screen in place of the message telling you where you've overdrafted, the size of your overdraft. So you go in there, and then you can get access to the game. At the moment, weapon selection is done with the arrows on the keys on the side. And I'll have a link to the video in the show notes if you guys want to see Doom playing on an ATM. Look at that.
Probably has a better resolution than my original PC when I played it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's got a pretty powerful ARM chip in there considering what PCs used to be back in the day. So that's pretty great. You guys have to go watch the video in the show notes. Okay, this next story, you're not even going to believe it. I had to put it in the show because this is going to blow your mind.
Okay.
Different listening dishes in different parts of the U.S. have picked up what appear to be intentional radio bursts that they suspect are coming from outside our galaxy.
Okay.
At first they thought it was a fluke because they picked it up and it was clear as day, but they're like, well, we've only got one of these. This can't really be, this is just too crazy to be legit. This was like, this is back in 2011, I believe. I might have that date wrong. Oh, I'm sorry. 2007. It was a brief, strong radio wave burst. They picked it up in Australia. So you got an Australia theme going here.
There's a theme, yeah.
See what I'm doing here? You see like this? And now on the opposite side of the world, astronomers have detected a second blast of similar proportions, meaning, A, the first one was not a fluke, and B, we have absolutely no idea what's causing them. The second ultra-fast flash of radio waves was discovered by the Arecibo Radio Telescope in Puerto Rico, which has been putting out its feelers in hopes of discovering neutron stars. Instead, it got the second instance of the so-called fast radio burst, or what we call them FRBs in the biz, which finally allowed astronomers to rule out cosmic noise and formally report them.
Huh.
Are you fascinated?
A little bit, yeah.
NPR did a story on it. They went down and got an interview, and here's a little clip from their interview.
As you would imagine, there's been lots of speculation about what's behind these mysterious bursts. Some astronomers think they're caused by blitzars. These aren't Santa's reindeer, but a pulse of energy from a supermassive star collapsing into a black hole. Others think they may be caused by powerful solar flares coming from stars nearer by.
There have even been discussions in the literature about signatures from extraterrestrial civilizations.
What?
I had to mention it, didn't I?
It's just a theoretical paper suggesting the bursts could be generated by intelligent beings intentionally beaming a radio signal directly at Earth.
What?
I would bet against
it. I doubt it.
That's James Cordes. He's an astronomer at Cornell University who's also in the hunt for an explanation of these radio bursts. Cordes says astronomers will need to find more examples of these bursts before they'll be able to say with any certainty what's causing them. But finding them will take time. The kinds of radio telescopes that can detect these bursts have what Cordes calls tunnel vision.
We don't see the whole sky. We see just a very narrow snippet of it.
So catching a burst in the act requires a bit of luck. Of course, that's frustrating for astronomers, but having only a tiny bit of hard data does have its upside. It means theoreticians can spin out all kinds of interesting ideas.
The nice thing about this in the current stage is that we really don't know what these bursts are caused by, and so the sky's the limit in some respects.
I'm tempted to make a comment about an astronomer using the phrase, the sky's the limit, but I think I'll let that pass. Joe Palca, NPR News.
So, chat room says it's somebody looking for grant funding. Angela, do you think it's aliens?
Well, that's what I was hoping they would say when they said it was a blitzer. I was like, well, that's not as fun. But yeah, that would be cool if it was life.
Eric, you sound skeptical.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
Yep.
Well, it might be aliens, sure. But the problem is they're in another galaxy and they're sending such a giant, unfocused burst of energy that it's the fact that it's hitting us is just like,
maybe.
What do you freaking do?
Eric, what you got to do is you got to pull from Star Trek. And now, I don't know. I don't often recommend we go here, but let's go motion picture. Remember V'ger. One of the problems with V'ger was is that V'ger was sending to the Enterprise and the Klingons beforehand and the communication station before that these really rapid bursts of communications that they were unable to interpret. But it was Spock who figured out if you slowed that sucker down and played it a little bit slower, you'd actually get a message. So maybe these aliens are so advanced, they're so far ahead of us that they just burst in communications faster than us.
Maybe they burst to us the entire answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Right.
All 42.
Encyclopedia Galactica.
Yeah, it's like terabytes of transfer in like a little short radio burst. Maybe not.
Well, if it's limited to light speed, it was aimed here 2 million years ago. Not many humans have them.
Yeah, I wonder who... Yeah, they were just thinking ahead, maybe. Stefan wrote in. Yesterday, we played a clip about the IBM typewriter, the classic. Stefan says, yeah, where I worked, the typewriter was so popular, they were often stolen from our offices, so some police forces had to have special teams just to investigate the typewriter thefts. We have played a clip of some classic... Do you remember those IBM typewriters with the ball head that could... Okay.
No. And it might be Steven, too, depending on which country that person is
from. Oh, do you want to write Sebastian's email there?
Yeah, sure. Sebastian writes, hey, Chris, I saw this on Twitter, and it just lit a light in my soul, remembering the good old day, and it's a flux capacitor charger that turns any ride into a DeLorean time machine.
And I want one. Can I show it to you? CNET ran an article about it that he sent us a link to.
I saw it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
You read this?
Days ago.
Oh, gosh, you are so internet hip.
I am.
It's ridiculous.
I'm on it.
So this, for those of you who are not as hip as my wife, you plug this into your cigarette adapter, and it gives you USB ports on the side, but better than that, it lights up as a flux capacitor.
Want that.
I know, right?
Is ThinkGeek selling that? Because that seems like a real ThinkGeek type.
Maybe.
Product.
I want Amazon to sell it so that way I can overnight it, because it's that important.
Oh,
shoot.
Thanks for emailing us. You can email us to today@jupiterbroadcasting.com or go over to techtalktoday.reddit.com because that's even better. That's our subreddit. I check that every morning before the show. I do not check emails every day. So if you want to get a story into the show, techtalktoday.reddit.com is the place to submit. If you send it by email, I'll probably get it a couple of days after you send it in. Speaking of sending stuff by email.
Yeah. The Fosho Awards is this Sunday. You can send me a picture of how you watch Jupiter Broadcasting.
How do you watch us, guys?
If you're listening to me right now, you're watching Jupiter Broadcasting.
Or listening. It could be like a picture of, you could take out your cell phone and like take a picture of us on your computer. Or if you play us on a smartphone app, take a screenshot, send it in.
Yep. Or a selfie with us in the background would be
selfie
cool.
Selfie would be awesome. we need your IRC nick, too, if you've got one. Or your Twitter handle, if you don't have that. Or just a name you want to go by. Maybe a little description of what shows you listen to and where you watch if you'd like, and send them to Angela@JupiterBroadcasting.com.
Yep.
Those award shows are the most fun on the Faux Show.
Yep.
And that'll be this Sunday, right?
Yep.
Right after the Linux Action Show.
Yep.
Yeah, we're going to also, we'll be discussing with the Crux Linux guys on Sunday Linux Action Show, and also Frank, the creator of OwnCloud, will be joining us. So big Sunday.
Sweet.
It's big Sunday. But we got a whole nother week. In fact, we still have plenty more of this show left. Join us tomorrow and Thursday, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, over at jblive.tv for Tech Talk Today. And if you'd like to support the Jupiter Broadcasting Network, help us keep it weird, invest in our future projects, please go over to patreon.com/today. We're trying to do some crowdfunding. And I would really love to keep the momentum going on this, because if you guys can keep the funding momentum going, we can keep the momentum going on our side to keep pushing things forward, to keep growing, to go into new areas, expand our coverage, all of that. Patreon.com/today is where you can go to get a little bit in on that. Get a little piece of that action. Patreon.com/today. And we really appreciate your support. And I'm excited you're here because there's a new gadget that's just out on the scene. I got to have it, honey. It's from IBM. We're doing an IBM theme this week to
in
wrap
Australia.
Up. And Australia. Well, that was today.
Okay.
But the week's theme is IBM clips. And babe, look at this. Tell me I couldn't be more productive with my brand new IBM dictating unit.
This pass play runs out of the I formation.
This man is working on a game plan. He scouts the other team's plays, pinpoints the weaknesses and errors, and records them on his new IBM 224 dictating unit. Left tackle and over the middle. This man is going to court, but not before he uses the new IBM 224 to record the information and data he needs to plead his case.
Negative decision was handed down by the appellate court. What's trouble?
This man is checking production. With this new IBM 224, he can record suggestions and ideas as they occur, instead of trusting them to memory. At only 28 ounces, this new IBM dictating unit is so small and so compact that you can use it anywhere you think. At home, on trips, in conferences, and of course behind your desk. For more information about the new IBM 224, call your IBM representative.